Mark.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 464. I'm Adam, and this is a comparative... Sorry, time is a comparative composite. And here's Robert Haynes. No? Is he asleep?
Uh-oh.
I'm sure I heard him clear his throat just a minute ago. We'll move on. Here's Mary Lang.
You're having issues.
He cleared his throat just a minute ago.
And now he's just messaged us with Gurr having issues. Apparently that's his quote.
Go on, Mary.
I didn't even hear the dinner gong.
What's his name? Oh, yeah, Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Carrot juice.
Ian Bissett.
You'll worry sooner when I start to bray.
And this will be surprising for everybody. Debbie Melrose.
You make delicious coffee, Janet.
Ooh.
Have I forgotten anyone?
It's Robert.
Apart from Robert.
I just don't know what to do with myself after Debbie's quote. Yeah. That was quite sultry for a Doctor Who podcast, Debbie.
If someone could message, probably be Kirby, message with Robert, that initially I did hear a throat clearing, and maybe he can't hear us.
He's,
maybe that's
he's saying issue. Something on here.
Is he? I can't hear anything.
You're having issues. Yeah, okay. What do you want me to say?
Nothing.
I did hear him clear his throat about 3 minutes ago. Anyway, right then. Hello and welcome to the show, everybody. Right, so Debbie, how are you?
I'm okay.
Oh, good, that's right. Getting
more
there,
tests,
right?
More tests, more things. Apparently I've got problems with my heart, my kidneys, my blood. Yeah, I'm just falling apart. Midlife service going on.
But on a positive note...
I'm back.
Yes.
Running sights, too.
Right, so the listeners are going to be absolutely thrilled to bits when eventually they get to hear the quote that Robert's decided to use on the show, but I'm sure he'll come along essentially. We are going to be reviewing...
Since you started early, you may hear the sound of my DVD. I will try to get it to turn off here.
The what?
Okay, there we go. Fine.
Thank you for that.
Didn't need to tell us that, no.
No, didn't really need to say that at all.
Wasn't necessary.
Yes, it was.
Which gives me the opportunity to play this brand new jingle.
Kirby's trying his hardest to bore us. Trying to make a cup of tea. You know he's going to ignore us. Maybe you will go for a wee.
I have a funny feeling that's going to be played quite a lot. It'll be moving up the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast jingles chart.
I didn't quite understand.
Oh, dear.
I didn't understand.
I'm sure you'll get another opportunity to hear it, Kirby.
That was brilliant.
Terror of the Vervoids. I'm going to turn my volume up, actually. She'll come down and tell me off for having it up, but I'll turn it up anyway. Begins. I take it everybody saw it. That's probably quite a good question to ask, isn't it?
It was hard for me to find one that actually had the courtroom sequences in, because every time I searched for it, people had reduxed it without all the courtroom bits.
Well, that's actually quite beneficial, to be fair.
Yes. Yeah, I think that would be a plus.
Except I believe there's more courtroom sequences in this one than some of the others.
Mm. Right then, so we've got things coming through on the feed while the title sequence loads. We've got Early, Lillian Robin, Debbie Melrose, I'm sat here waiting for a call. Terry Miles, good evening, everybody. Lillian Robin, Debbie. Terry Miles, live feed is okay. Terry Miles, you're on your feed, not the 20 megabyte. And Hev Pennant, a very professional radio presenter, said this is great viewing with a couple of sarcastic laughing emojis, which rather thinks maybe I should just move it off my own account and move it straight back on the 20 megabyte one. Oh, well, I'm going to carry on. About over 10 years of this. I've never got a job in radio. Who am I fooling? Right then. So, yeah, the Doctor is still a bit upset because Perry got done in the last episode.
She went off and got married to Yurkanos.
All right. No, yeah, we haven't actually got to that ridiculous twist yet, have we? So as far as we're concerned, she got done in.
Right.
Should we have a minute's silence for Perry? Or it's very unlikely because,
we'll
of course...
We'll do an accidental minute silence later when we all stop talking at once and wonder who's talking next.
Yeah. But if we have a minute's silence, it'll be quite an achievement for Kirby. So maybe we should try and attempt it. Yeah, just
we should go for that.
Challenge. Yeah.
That would be a serious mark of respect if Kirby.
Oh yeah, so he's grumbling. So they start.
Remember the last time.
Hi, Robert.
Hey,
hello. I had to reboot because it was.
Because you haven't got a Mac, I know.
What, this is like 5 years ago with me, huh?
Right, anyway, Robert, what's your quote?
Yes.
What's your quote?
What's your quote, Robert?
That's it.
What's your quote?
Shut up.
No, the old guy when he dies.
Yeah, that's where you go.
Oh, that's it. Okay, well, that was well worth waiting for, wasn't it?
How did you carve that? So, but he chose dying.
Anyway, virtual hugs to Debbie. That's what Laurie Nick says.
Oh, thank
you. Don't hug her too hard for social distancing reasons. And of course,
too hard, I might fall apart. Yeah, I hate feeling this fragile. It's so weird.
It is. So yeah, the terror of the Vervoids is in the future, apparently, which is a bit confusing because obviously there's no point in having the trial if he's not going to get done in. But
that right doesn't make sense. What was the point of the trial?
And it's on a ship called the Hyperion 3, which is almost like a sort of cruising leisure centre, I suppose you'd call it, really. We meet Bond girl Honor Blackman, who doesn't look too bad in these opening sequences. Still looks
most
pretty
of the
good.
Time in the gym.
I think she's the worst thing in this episode, to be honest.
You do?
And I hate saying that because it's Honor Blackman, but I think she's the worst bloody thing in
it. Ooh, save anyway. It to the end.
I'm just sprinkling a little intrigue in here, and then I'll shut up till the end.
It's just Matthew Kressel isn't, partaking in this.
When was the last time Matthew was on?
Is he watching? Oh, I don't know. Tim Drury says, "Oh, Tim Drury, enjoying the new mention." Hang on, how do you know about that? I haven't played it yet. Well, we're going to play Tim Drury's mention.
Lots of things have changed.
No, it hasn't. These are brand spanking new, these jingles.
We're decorated along with
things. I'm not talking about the characters and stuff, but it's quite a bit of a stunt casting to have Honor Blackman in Doctor Who. And then we meet the beardy bloke.
Your standard stunt casting for J&T.
Yeah. Yeah. Then we meet a beardy bloke who obviously is a certain mystery character initially. He bumps into a bloke who shouldn't know who he is. Forgive me if I don't give you the names of these characters because I'd like to be consistent.
Kimball is the old man.
Oh, no, I don't know who the old man is. I don't know who the bloke with the beard is. All I know is the bloke with the beard is sort of undercover and almost has his cover blown.
Wasn't the bloke with the beard in the Dalek episode where he was the android who fought his programming?
Was he?
Yeah, I thought so.
Well,
I'll look into that.
Kirby will find out. And then we'll have to play that other jingle again. Do you know what it reminded me of? This opening sequence, what it actually reminded me of, Crossroads from the 1970s. It sort of had that sort of feel of the sort of foyer to the Crossroads Motel.
Yeah, I get you now. Yeah, the palms and stuff like that. And it's very dated decor for a
futuristic spaceship thing.
Well, everything comes around again.
Bear in mind, we're going to have so many people giving their reviews and sort of thoughts on this story. We'll have to try and sort of obviously do a little bit faster than normal. There's a sort of... Sorry? very funny, Rob. There's quite a large cast of people wearing overalls. I suppose they need a lot of people to create the compost heap, don't they? The TARDIS arrives.
What happens to all of those people?
They get done in. Most of the people get done in on this story.
No, they don't.
What?
Just for once, everybody gets done.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Then we cut.
That was the one in the lighthouse.
Wiped out.
Oh, no. Hef Pennant.
Most people live in this one.
Hef Pennant says she's absolutely loving this. Oi, this is important. Yeah. Nobody's ever said this about the show before. Hello, I'll have to mute you lot. Hello. Oh, good, I've got a word in. Hef Pennant says she's absolutely loving it. I think we might have to send some pills round to her. Debbie, you quite live closer to her than I do. Right then.
Well, could she send her pills round to me?
You need them after this.
Meanwhile, in the TARDIS console room,
Doctor Who.
An overacting young lady with curly red hair is forcing the Doctor to do some unwanted exercise.
Yeah, that's mean. That's just really mean.
Yeah.
Don't inflict your shenanigans on me, young lady.
But I will say, they do have a bit of on-screen chemistry. That's about the only thing. She is exceptionally irritating, but they do have some on-screen
chemistry. He really does look after her as well. I like that.
Anyway, did we notice the square things in the scenery? This might be their last appearance.
I did.
No. What's square
thing? Well, if you go into it's like the security room, all the black walls and some monitors on the screen, and Yolande Palfrey and the security guard, who turns out to be a baddie later on in the story, on the walls,
to be honest,
are the square things that have been appearing in Doctor Who since the early 70s, which I've been asking you to keep an eye out for, which clearly you didn't.
Sorry, what was that?
I did.
Oh, well done, Robert, yes. Okay, Robert gets one of these just for old time's sake. There we go.
There he goes.
The communication room or those aren't the same things. No.
Yes, they are.
Yes, they are.
Thank you, Debbie.
It's a reuse of the same old set.
It is. They're all over the place in that room. I think they've... we're not going to use these again. Let's paste the whole place in them. then the Doctor... the TARDIS has to... Pardon?
I gotta say, I really hate that line when she brings him a drink.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just like, you know, it's just like, oh, it could be this. Yeah. It's like... You make great coffee, Janet. It's like,
yeah.
That's why I used to get my clothes. Yeah. It's like, yeah, thank you for my opinion. I'll go now. I like that. It's like, make great coffee, Janet. It's like, yeah, bugger.
Where's Brad?
should have nutted him and just said, here's your coffee, sunshine.
Laura Nick says, the gang's almost here. And then she says, fat shaming. I don't know what you're implying there. I'm trying to sit in a position where you can't actually see my midriff. But last week... last week, Lillian wanted to see my rack. And if you play your cards right, that won't be happening again. Right then.
And we've seen your plumber's crack.
Shut up, Mary! That was purely accidental. And I had to write a letter of apology to Mark Zuckerberg.
All right, let's crack on.
So that's how you do it, Kirby. Yeah, so the Doctor and Mel arrive in this rather sort of warehousey sort of... Looks like it's filmed at the back, isn't it? At the back of the studio. So normally the cameras are facing the Blue Peter studio, all the sort of ornaments and pets and everything, but they've actually turned the camera around and filming the bit behind where the cameras are. The Blue
Peter store
studio.
Everything.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it's quite an effective, like, for once, you know, you don't see everything, so because it's quite dark on the outside of it, so you get this...
I suppose they had to darken it up just to sort of reduce the ability to see all the gory details of the. You know.
That's the other area that's too bright where they the lounge area.
Oh yeah, they could have done some mood lighting up there.
Yeah,
tell you.
Light.
Dimmer switch. Yeah.
Yeah. That was another thing it reminded me of. When the girls were young, we used to take them to ball pits. There was a ball pit in a lake. It was sort of the theme of it was like space and a bit. What's it called? Space World or something? I can't remember now. But we used to take the
pit in your balls.
Space balls. Anyway, we used to take them there. This
opportunity.
I don't know why I'm still stuck on episode one. When I made it quite clear, I wanted to move on. I'm just rambling. I'm having Kirby syndrome happening tonight. I did notice that the Commodore and his little baddie sidekick were wearing face masks on their shoulders. And actually, all the crew were wearing face masks on their shoulders, which are very strange.
What's with the welders' hats?
Backup.
Welders,
yeah.
Thing.
this Commodore's quite a familiar face. Has he been in Doctor Who before?
Michael Craig. He was in the Mysterious Island movie.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I've actually got a letter from him.
Have you? Saying, what, was it a restraining order? Or
stop writing to me.
He's in Australia now.
How is he?
Stop following me.
Are you talking about Michael Craig?
Possibly, I don't know. I'm losing the plot.
Yeah, he's been in all sorts of things on TV. Arthur of the Britons, The Immigrants, Rush, The Professionals, Shoestring, Timeless Land, Triangle, Tales of the Unexpected, Robin of Shorewood.
Someone's got Wiki up.
Yeah, he's trying his hardest to bore us. Time to make it up with me. You know he's going to ignore us. Maybe you will go for a wee.
I can't understand that. I'm sorry.
I have no idea.
You're going to have to put the lyrics up for Kirby.
I'm not putting the lyrics up.
And Mary, because I'm not understanding it either.
Well, when you listen to the show, it'll be unusual, wouldn't it? When you listen to the show back, when it comes out on Tuesday, you'll be able to hear it properly in its full glory.
You mean this is a show?
For a wee.
Thank you, Debbie Lee. She can hear it. I know she's only down the road.
That's the only bit I can get is the wee.
Maybe
and ignore us.
Okay, I'll say what the lyrics are. Kirby's trying his hardest to bore us, trying to make a cup of tea. You know he will ignore us. Maybe you'll go for a wee wee. Okay, that's the lyrics. It's quite plain.
Where did that come from?
Adam.
Oh, God. Yeah. So the Doctor gets brought up in front of the Commodore and they are introduced, and he says he's known as a Doctor, and then they ask how long they've known each other, and it's a bit boring, blah, 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 blah. Then we cut to some sequences of these rather interesting aliens that keep forgetting to press their translator buttons on their their costumes, apart from obviously the one that isn't one, and McGarry. Even worse that he forgot to
you press know it's his. Their planet that they're leaving to go to Earth.
Yeah.
Anyway,
which
they're poking around,
which begs the question, are there like large cities for humans that on that planet, because these guys can't live in an oxygen atmosphere, so there was...
Unless the humans go down with face masks or whatever, their own personal...
And spacesuits.
And the Vervoids,
could be true, couldn't it?
The Vervoids were developed on that planet.
Oh.
The rude things.
Yes, the rude things.
The rude things.
Laurie Nix quite rightly says, these themes are epic. Thank you, Laurie.
Yes.
It took me all of 5 minutes to write and record those.
What theme is she talking about?
Kirby's theme.
Yes. Terry Miles says, pressing the button is a plot point. Yes, it is, because one of them didn't press his button to make it blatantly obvious, although when I first watched the story, I didn't pick up on that, so it was quite good. But they did make a rather childish point of saying, oh, look, I spotted that, you didn't, to the Aliyah.
I just assumed his little button thing had already been pressed.
Yeah. So did I.
But the light didn't come on.
No, it didn't. No, but you wouldn't have noticed that when first watching it.
Well, it depends.
No, I don't think you would. I didn't.
Very cryptic.
And anytime people say you forgot to turn on your translator, it's because you're hearing the gobbledygook instead of English.
And I hate the way that they nod their heads so... obviously.
Do you know, that reminded me of a previous Doctor Who alien that nodded their head while talking, because you couldn't see their mouths talking, but I couldn't really remember what it was.
Not the Robots of Death?
No, I don't think it was. There was another one, a similar sort of...
There's Daleks, where they have to light their lights so you can...
No.
Nodding.
Yes, dear.
Daleks don't nod there.
The early Cybermen did it, but not in such a sort. Oh, never mind. But there were. I think it might be.
I know you're.
It's not the creatures we had not so long ago. The Faith Brown's Peak creatures. You know those? Yes.
No, they used them
in Revenge of the Cybermen. They were quite noddy.
And big ears too. Right then, back to.
I have a question getting back to the story.
Oh, yes.
Why was it necessary for this guy to fake his own death? Why not just say, you know what, I forgot, I gotta get off the ship, sorry, here's my ticket back, and then just leave. And then come back as a Megarian. Why it was necessary for
Because he bumped into that chap who knew him, I suppose.
I know, but why didn't he just pretend like he was getting off the ship?
Yeah,
just leave. This elaborate murder thing.
I know, Ian.
Nobody cared.
Ian. I know. Yes. I know the answer to that question, and I'm so proud. I should give myself. Shut up, Kirby. I knew it first. So I'm going to play a special bit of music we normally reserve for Mary. The answer is it's written by Pip and Jane Baker.
Okay.
Mine was simpler.
Well,
it's a science fiction fantasy TV.
That was my first choice. I
have a question.
Jane Baker going to be the excuse time and time again, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah, go on.
Honor Blackman said that she went to the wrong room and they flipped the key. Oh, you're really in room 9, not 6.
Yes.
But that means that the keys are the same for room 6 and 9 because she was actually in. She said she went in.
Yeah, their luggage wasn't there.
She went in and all the keys are the same, you know.
She used to be a secret agent.
It could have been unlocked.
She used to be a secret agent, and so she has awesome picks
up. Secret agent. Yeah.
I will say, though, that my answer was much
better.
They've
given her a number.
Or they accidentally gave her the mask key.
Anyway, back to Doctor Who before so we can actually get through this story, only in episode 1.
Master's not on till next week.
So, are you getting the impression that we don't really want to talk about this story?
Well, I do, but I just don't want to talk for it for too long. Right,
where we are in the watching of the story here.
What?
Not very far.
Yeah,
we can get up on Megarian somewhere. I don't know.
Anyway, Mel goes poking around, and they both go on their little missions of espionage.
I just mention something, that the gymnasium is absolutely pathetic.
Is it?
It is.
Yeah,
it's also way too big. It's a waste of space.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll forward your apologies. I'll forward your complaints to the BBC.
Thank you.
Plus, there were no instructions on that tape that he put in for her. He says, there's instructions on all the tapes except the one I just put in for you that's got music.
Anyway, so
the exercise bicycle in the ship is the same one that was in
the TARDIS.
TARDIS.
Same manufacturer, you know. They just knock him up. Yeah, you know.
That's what she said. Anyway, right then.
She said.
Quite comfy. Space and time.
That's what she said, that was brought into the show about 7 years ago by Mr. Ben Shoveler. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been reading a book about comedy and how to write it. Apparently, it's a cardinal rule not to use phrases like that's what she said in a comedy scenario. But it seems to work on this show. I don't know how that
we
can
love
work.
It. We have totally embraced that.
Yes.
Just a bit, yeah.
To our dismay.
Yeah. And it turns out, right? Yeah.
Hev Pennant says, I hate to say this, I have never watched Doctor Who. However, this is a lot of fun.
What?
It's like you're speaking another language. Well, it'd be nice if we actually get around to talking about Doctor Who, Hev, to be fair.
You know what? Speaking of my early teen years, that's what she said. I've never watched Doctor Who. But it's like you're speaking another language. That's most of the girls I spoke to.
Anyway, let's see if we can get through this episode, for God's sake.
This episode is really good.
Moving on. I'm sort of spinning through episode 1. As per usual, the Doctor is sort of... they're being suspicious of him, or basically that the real baddies are trying to sort of... distract the attention away from them, and using the Doctor and Mel as a potential scapegoat. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Then we boringly cut back to a court scene in which Valiard and the Doctor have a bit of a pathetic, childish fight. And
as
then,
usual,
if the Time Lords spin around their chairs fast enough, will they take off because of their collars?
I don't think they've attempted it, but it'd be worth a go.
Well, they might really worth them down the platform for all we know.
Oh, God. Anyway, Hev Pennant says, are you going to kick me off this now? No, I'm blimmin' well not. We've got three people watching the show. That's more than we normally have, so that's good. I shouldn't really say that.
Three more than we normally have.
There you go. Well, it's still a shame we've got more people on it than off it, if you know what I mean. So anyway, Bonnie Langford literally bores the poor bloke to death in the final scene and then kills him with a high-pitched squeal. He got electrocuted
what's
as well.
Funny,
what's funny?
Now when the guy walks in, he says, we don't want you breaking your neck yet.
Yeah.
Because, is he planning to break her neck or something at a certain point of time?
I don't know.
I think the line is, I'll go first. We don't want you breaking your neck. No. At least not until. What were you going to do when you get in there?
Yeah.
Don't worry. Come on in.
What an odd line, though.
But I will say, I know she's a singer and dancer and everything. She was able to get the pitch of the scream right for the sting at the end of the episode.
Got a set of lines on her.
I mean, that's fantastic, to be honest.
And at least we were able to break, for the recap in episode two, we were able to brace ourselves for said scream on its repeat.
Yeah. There's a God, she screamed
so much. She was instructed to get that key.
Yeah, that was interesting. Everybody talking over each other then.
Silly.
It was originally it was like, you know, oh, here's Mel, she's screaming. But now I'm just, I look at that because as I got older, I'm like, that's really, they tied that really in quite well. I thought they, you know, dropped the pitch of the music or brought it to match her scream. It's like, no, she did that. It's like, wow, that's just awesome.
on our stream on the 20 megabyte page, Christian Basil waved at us. So wave back at Christian.
Wave.
Oh, if indeed he's still there. Sorry to interrupt you, but we have a show to do. Right then. So out the isolation room, there's somebody.
All sorts of famous people on.
What, on the
like
show?
Sylvester, just a few days ago.
Yes, I know. Yes, but a chap comes out of the isolation room covered with a load of broken bits, and he looks like he's vomited down himself. He's also wearing a face mask, so maybe that's the COVID room.
Very good.
I'll just skip through a little bit. Yeah, so the Vervoids, we don't know their Vervoids. Vervoids. Have escaped. They've escaped, apparently, and they need bright light to escape from their pods. And there's a very cool scene in which these two, what are these strange aliens called again?
Huh?
What?
The strange aliens in the gold doodahs.
Megarians.
Yeah. When they're playing Space Invaders, it looks like Space Invaders.
No.
Here we go.
They're playing Phoenix.
They're what?
They're playing
Phoenix.
Phoenix.
Yes.
Okay. Either way, it's a like Space Invader based game.
It looked like Galaga to me at first, but then.
It's Galaga, wouldn't it? I thought it was Galaga.
Yeah, Galaga.
I will say that we may scoff at the fact they're playing this retro game, but people are playing retro games now.
Yeah,
I play retro games.
That doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
My kids are playing all these ones that look like games that I was playing, but that's the best graphics we could get then.
Yes.
Like, why are you playing that now?
Roblox is weird. It looks like really classic stuff from the Spectrum.
Yeah.
Why are you doing this?
But I will say the way they've presented it in that like almost like a 3D screen was ahead of its time, to be fair.
Yeah, they look good.
Lillian Robbins says, I hope you saw the clip from Bugsy Malone of Bonnie Langford that I posted, talk about screeching. Which I originally saw in a thing called Just William.
I'm back.
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, that was incredible. Yeah.
Are you old enough to remember Just William, Debbie?
No, why not?
Yeah, she was in that, and her catchphrase was, I'll squeam and squeam until I'm thick.
I knew about that. Because of interviews with her and things like I saw on Wogan, but I first met her in Bugsy Malone.
Well, I first met her, I didn't actually meet her. I went at the Her Majesty Theatre when she presented a dance show. My older daughter was appearing in.
I saw her talk with Sylvester at Brighton Comic Con about 4 or 5 years ago. That was terrific. We got there really early and they were first on stage on the Sunday. And it was terrific because it was supposed to be an exclusive and we got allowed in. It was brilliant.
Well, I get from this. Mary.
Yes.
What I get from this is knowing that now she can act quite well, it's a shame she didn't learn a bit earlier in her career.
Oh, I thought she acted very well in this.
Yeah.
Overacted, maybe.
To me, she's the highlight of this whole
Just because she screams. I mean, the character screams.
It's the screaming that I hate.
Mm-hmm. I just find that she's a little overacting a little bit.
I mean, she screams perfectly. It's what she was told to do.
Fair enough.
I thought she was perfect.
She's a great actress, to be honest. I mean,
she is a great actress. I agree, but I didn't find
when
she was them.
But you listen to her talk about it, she's like, "I was there to do a job. This is what they told me to do. This is what they wanted from me." And by the sound of things, they didn't give her an awful lot. And they
she brings a lot of new energy to it.
Yeah. All I'm saying is that I didn't doubt the fact that she'd get out. I just felt that she was overdoing the acting a little bit.
It's refreshing.
It's refreshing after what we went through with Perry.
Yeah. Well, she's clearly a far more experienced performer.
You're on the Mel bandwagon now.
Okay. Anyway.
She's a perfectly fine companion. I was kind of upset that she left, except, I mean, of course, Ace is a much better companion.
Ace is fantastic.
I think Ace is my second favorite classic companion.
Yeah, we haven't quite got there yet, Kirby, to be fair.
We're still on my Blu-ray.
Slightly jumping ahead of yourself. Lucky you didn't get the jingle played. Anyway,
I know this isn't the most engrossing story, but we haven't quite got to Ace yet.
No, anyway, there's a death in. Somebody gets poisoned, don't they? The beardy bloke who's masquerading as a Megarian or whatever you call him dies, and of course, because initially the Doctor and Mel are getting sort of blamed, and it's proof we haven't done it. You know. Sorry, was somebody talking over me?
I think our audience is drinking tea.
And then we have another bickering session in this courtroom where the Doctor shows off about his amazing ability to spot somebody not pitching their what they call those things?
Communicator thing on.
Yes, the
button.
The button that makes him us understand what they're saying.
Communicator button.
It's not a communicator button, is it? It's a universal translator button. Yeah, button. We move forward.
There's no evidence that it's a universal translator. It just translates their language into English.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not necessarily into every language.
I was just referencing Star Trek.
Drugs again.
Kirby.
I was finding the weather cooling down a bit, but I'm starting to get a bit hot under the collar at the moment.
I wonder why.
It's my job to be pedantic.
No, it isn't. So the little old chap gets done in by a green hand, and then the Doctor and Mel sort of break the fire alarm seal and set off the fire alarm so as they can get
into
this.
Man, there are people trapped.
Sorry?
Quick, man, there are people trapped.
Yeah. Now. If you set a fire alarm off of the spaceship, surely you're going to be a problem there, aren't you? Because you've got the muster station is normally outside, and there'll be a bit of a problem.
Go outside, yeah.
It's not the Red Funnel Ferry.
There's no fire out there.
Anyway.
To your muster stations. I think they'd be a bit different on board a spaceship.
Lillian Robbins says, it's also Ian's job to be equally pedantic. I haven't heard Ian be pedantic once yet.
Ooh. Oh, you haven't played his review yet.
Oh, okay. very funny. Anyway, so the Doctor and Mel find this woman. I told you, I was well impressed with the makeup on the semi vervoid lady.
That's brilliant. That pulsates and stuff. I thought it was fantastic.
Silly, did you guys watch the behind the sofa thing?
No.
Yeah.
No, because I don't have the Blu-ray.
You guys kept on thinking that was Perry.
Yeah. Ah. Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up because that was going to be one of my comments. Is God, the boys are stupid on this. It's like they should get rid of them boys. It's like all they kept on going on about was the decor. It's like,
what are you talking about?
The Blu-ray Kirby.
Blu-ray review.
Well, who's saying this?
Oh, it's
the review.
Mark Fraser Hines, Matthew
and Edric. But they're just terrible at commenting on it. Because they just
They've been very good on it.
Almost as bad as we are at the moment. Anyway, what got me was that... She turns over. I thought that would have set Mel off. So when she turned over and Mel didn't scream, I was quite relieved. And just making us... What made her scream was a poor woman opening her eyes up.
That's what she was told to do.
I know, I'm talking at a characterly based, you silly man.
I know.
But the thing is, the moment there was to scare the audience.
And somehow,
you delay the scream. It's like, that's not so, she screamed.
Somehow, all the times I've seen this story, I've always focused on the weird makeup with the pulsating and everything. This last time I watched it was the first time I noticed that she has the leaf coming up the back of her head as well.
I only just
noticed that, yes.
Well done, Kirby. Great. 10 points for observation.
yes, thank you. Are we having a quiz? That makes me win, yes.
No. Anyway, the woman, in fact, is the lab assistant or something like that of some bloke with a quiff. Their guns are a bit weird, aren't they? They're sort of upside down.
Label makers.
And they're called phasers as well. I wonder where they got that idea from.
Hold them.
Isla asked why they were holding bananas threateningly. bananas can be quite dangerous in the right hands, you know.
Master?
You're always holding them like guns anyway.
Always, yes.
Master?
Yes.
They really are label makers with the little label... the embossing thing removed and held upside down. You can actually see the logo in some cases.
Well, we haven't had to buy them now.
So we all want to ignore it. Maybe
you will go for I'd like to be in the...
Oh, with the purple and black uniforms? Yep.
I'm going to go for Janet's uniform.
I was thinking of becoming a Vervoid for the next one if we're still having to wear masks.
Anyway, back to the story.
One of the nicest uniforms there, except
what was the nicest uniform? The doctor's.
Janet's uniform.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was cute.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, we should be asking River Song about the danger of bananas.
Should we?
Yes.
Bananas.
Well, I have got a Funko Pop of the Ninth Doctor holding a banana. That's quite appropriate, I suppose. the Vervoids. Now the Vervoids. Now we pointed out about the fact that the head of the Vervoids is a bit rude, but the bodies are terrible. They just look like blokes wearing badly stuck on leaf costumes.
I thought they were actually kind of cool.
The heads are great, and the cameras are sort of zooming in and out, and they're just sort of wandering around like 1960s Doctor Who monsters. And I know it's still Doctor Who, it's not the 60s.
They spend a lot of money on those costumes. The leaves are all different, and they're made from three different materials.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Wow.
They look like sycamore leaves.
Look at them up close. I think they're really quite an impressive-looking creation.
Oh, I'm not denying that they are quite impressive, but they do look still like blokes in costumes.
Yeah, but they're
that's Doctor Who, isn't it?
Right, it is, and it's Star Trek as well.
Well, I mean, they're growing a workforce, are they not?
They are.
These sentient plants that can be basically slave labor. Mm. So, of course, they're going to have...
Can I mention something about these Vervoids?
You can, as long as it's relevant.
They're genetically enhanced, right?
Yeah.
So why would you build into them these deadly stingers in their bloody hands? Seriously, are they dumb?
It's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
Right then, I have to interrupt you, everybody. I'm going to get told off for shouting, but I have to interrupt you because on the feed that's going through on the 20 megabyte page, Christian Basil has been saying stuff. He says, Mel Bush's special D&D weapon, the Screaming Banshee. Then he says... Bonnie and Mel redeemed herself big time in Big Finish, true. And Mel taking on Valiard, he's just at Scars. She's brilliant. Are you just at Scars? That must be a line. And then he says... it's a Big Finish, is it? Okay. They finally used Mel's speciality about being a computer program in Big Finish, yeah. And then... he says, J&T was moving the show camp-wise, so I wouldn't expect less. Not Bonnie Langford's fault. Oh, somebody at the door. Right, so sorry about that. I just thought I'd better, because Christian's, he might not be watching
Christian's,
anymore.
Christian's door or your door? Because you were reading what Christian was saying, so.
Yes, no, the door opened. I thought I was about to get told off for talking too loudly.
Oh, not again, Adam.
Your door, then.
Well, I'm trying to talk over you lot. Anyway.
You shouldn't do that.
Back to the gym and the boring scene between Bonnie Langford and Honor Blackman. Mel, meanwhile, puts some earphones in a grill and then tries to listen in on a conversation. The doctor comes in and she ends up putting a clothing bin. What number clothing bin was it?
164 or something like
no,
that?
No, 126. You would have got that wrong in the quiz, wouldn't you? Anyway, and the doctor sort of...
yeah, I'm sure that if we'd had the quiz, he would have asked that.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, so the doctor sort of misses her nearly and then realises very cleverly, after listening to the recording, that she's just about to get incinerated. That reminded me a little bit about K-9 in a previous story where K-9 was travelling along a conveyor belt and just about to get incinerated, about how hot it was. The Vervoids are multiplying and planning to do something very mean to the humans. I'm just giving up. There's another
hard
long.
Hard to understand. I found.
Of course, the other thing I forgot to mention in the court scenes, which we're trying to gloss over the court scenes. There's lots of mentions of the Matrix. They're not possible to change the Matrix or edit it. Yet it's clearly that's what's been happening.
I didn't do that. Wasn't standing there with an axe wrecking the room.
Yeah.
Anyway, when we saw that, it was further edited, of course, by the Australians. Can't just leave anything alone, can you?
It's not my fault.
And so this one even got even more convoluted because they just cut to this thing and it's just like, what? You've got an Australian accent. Who else am I going to blame?
Do not take responsibility for all Australian editors.
Lillian Robbins says Planet Shmanet Janet. That's like a poem, isn't it?
Oh, that's a Rocky Horror quote.
Really?
Well done, Kirby. Anyway,
really? Didn't know that.
There's a shot of the doctor smashing up a console, and that's with the axe, and that said, I didn't do that. Blah 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 blah.
One of my favourite films ever.
Honor Blackman gets knocked out.
I didn't do that.
Pardon?
Nothing.
He's amusing himself.
Oh, is he? That's unusual. Honor Blackman gets knocked out. But the Vervoids could have killed her then, couldn't they? But she's got another episode in her contract, so they didn't. And then, of course, the ship is then... It's quite an impressive ship, actually, from the exterior shots. Is aimed at the black hole of whatever it is, whatever it's called.
I must say that I really do quite enjoy this particular series. We've seen a lot of outside of ships, and that's been quite nice to see, actually.
My dogs do a lot of outside ships. Modeling.
They actually filmed a lot longer segment, but they had problems... Yeah.
We break for no one, you know.
I'm really disappointed that I put in probably the best joke that I've put in the show for a long, long time, and only Ian spotted it.
I heard both jokes.
Right, I'm going to have to make a time reference on that, because I'm going to have to dig that one off the recording. Kirby, you're going to have to send me the video of the show.
What was the joke?
Oh, God, I'm not going to repeat it.
Yes, you are. Go on.
I can't remember. Anyway, right then. So the ship is headed for the black hole of
Tartarus.
Yeah, that's the one. And there's lots of things going off, and the Magellans try to take over and steer the ship away.
Magellans.
Magellans? What the hell?
And then the security guard then reveals he's a big baddie, and they're sort of then it becomes a sort of base under siege a little bit more. Quiff Man sort of pretends to join forces with Quiff Mel Man? And the waitress. Is she a waitress or cabin girl? I can't remember now.
She seems to do everything.
It says stewardess.
Oh, stewardess. That's the one. Yes, sorry. Yes.
Yeah, she does literally everything by the looks.
I know. Yeah, she's very good, isn't she? She deserves a promotion.
She's making coffees and teas for the crew. She's checking all the customers in. She's going through.
Giving them all massages. Yeah, she's great. Yeah. She is.
But you gotta wonder with all these guests that got checked in, where are they all? You know,
they've all gone, haven't they?
Lillian Robbins just getting herself into trouble. She says that was a joke. You might not tell your co-host, but you can tell your audience. Now listen to the podcast when it comes out. I really can't remember it. It's comedy is off the cuff, you see. I haven't got any cuffs on at the moment. But
the moment's gone.
Yeah, the moment's gone.
Move on, and you can catch it later on.
Yeah. Melanie is hiding in the air conduit while the Magellians collapse. Whatever, they're dead.
That was actually quite impressive when they took the mask off and the faces underneath. I mean, it was just a static shot, but
Goldfinger. That sort of thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Goldfinger.
You know, it looked alien-esque without it being overly done. So.
And then we find out Quiffman. Quiffman is involved in it as well. And he gets done in by the Vervoids. That sounds like a really painful death, doesn't it? Commodore's hurt his arm, so he's got his arm up in a sling. And
that's good makeup.
And then the Doctor... Honor Blackman and Mel confront the Vervoids, and Honor Blackman thinks, "Ah, it's all right, I can talk him out of it," and gets killed. And then there's a mention of the compost heap, which makes Mel cry. And of course, the Doctor then arranges for the extermination of the Vervoids just to save humans, because of course they would have gone around the whole universe killing everybody. Right. And everybody's sad, especially the Valiard, who's sort of sad and happy at the same time, because he can then charge the Doctor with the genocide.
No, I can't. because the research still exists, and they were created in a laboratory. They can be recreated exactly the same.
Ah, yes. Mm-hmm. The DNA must exist somewhere.
Remember the guy destroyed all the...
Doesn't work, Kirby, when you talk over everybody. Robert, anyway. you started then, Robert, didn't you? And Kirby talked over you, didn't he? He did.
The guy destroyed all the info about the making.
Yeah, I thought
it was just a wastebasket of. If that was all the research in that wastebasket.
Can't he just watch Doctor Who and then they can pick it up from there?
Yeah.
Thank you. Lillian Robbins says, "Or."
In the new series.
The show comes out on Tuesday. I'm sure the joke will be in there somewhere. And when Kirby sends me through the video of the live feed, I'll be able to take a snippet out and we can cherish the joke forever.
And the fact that I talked over it, I do apologise because I didn't realise it was going
to... That's unusual, Debbie, isn't it?
What if we can't understand it because you talked over it?
Oh, yeah. You're blaming Debbie now, are you, Kirby? So something that you're renowned for doing, when one other person does it, you take the opportunity to blame them. Can I get on with the show? So Terror of the Vervoids. Okay, right. Bearing in mind, it's written by Pip and Jane Baker. It's actually not too bad, to be fair. It's quite a cuddly little story. I do like the Doctor still. Mel, I accept she's a good actress, a good performer. I just find her characterisation at this stage a little bit irritating. She does grow on me after this, but it must have been really difficult.
What?
Pardon? No, it must have been really difficult to come in as basically playing a character that's already got the relationship with the Doctor. So she's come in from the future. So she's already, and for us, it's a bit confusing because normally they get that greeting. You meet the person who's going to be the companion, and they build up a relationship. And we never ever see that unless maybe in Big Finish. I don't know. So they
have to say it's smaller on the outside.
What?
A companion always has to make a comment about the TARDIS.
Nice one, Robert. Right then. Anyway, so it's okay. To be fair, we've had three stories from this season of allegedly bad Doctor Who, and none of them have been particularly bad. And ironically, it's actually been one of the most consistently good series of Doctor Who that we've had for a while. So
Totally agree.
And. I think they, I did sort of take the mickey out of the body work of the Vervoids, but design wise, it's one of the best monsters we've seen to date. And again, the monsters put into this series, and like I mentioned about in Mysterious Planet, the robot there is an incredibly good piece of design and execution of design. So, all in all, it's been so far, and I'm going to say that now because I really do like the last two episodes of this series, the last story, the two-parter. So all in all, this has been a bit of a triumph for me, this series. So it's...
triumph for the Time Lord.
Forces the argument as why the hell did they do what they did to it. I know Michael Grade hated Doctor Who, but the idea was to make it rubbish, and it's not rubbish. I'm sorry, rubbish. But it ain't. Right then, so Robert, what did you think?
I agree with you. I mean, I like it. But except for with Mel, I do like Mel in it because I think she is a breath of fresh air. She brings a lot of energy to it, I think, and her eagerness. And she is quite a go-getter, you know, wanting to get on with things, find out things. So she's very proactive, and she doesn't bicker with the Doctor, which is good. I mean, we do miss her intro scene, as you've mentioned.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just found that the screaming is just too much. That's the only thing. Yeah. And it's so, like, out of character to how she is. And in real life, would people really... Ah, I open my eyes. Ah! You know, it's a bit... silly. I mean, she's just doing what she's told.
Yeah, they were just taking advantage of her incredible ability to scream,
characterization
basically.
Characterization-wise, yeah. It doesn't work. But, I quite enjoy it. I think it's probably one of Pip and Jane Baker's best sort of efforts.
Yeah, again, they've done a couple of good stories so far, if you include the Mark of the Rani.
Mark of the Rani. Yeah. But, then it goes downhill with them.
Yeah. But really, that's only one bad story they delivered, to be fair.
I quite enjoy it, and apart from some of the sets and a bit of overlighting,
I didn't see any sex in it. But,
oh goodness! I think I'll leave.
Complains about
then.
Us.
So I must have missed that bit. I must have been looking in the wrong direction. Anyway, Kristen Basil says, "Who says I want a vacation trip with that crosses a black hole?" And then he says she's basically that employee she's basically that employee at one of those run-down hotels who is everything. He's talking about the stewardess. And then he says,
Janet.
What were those crunchy seeds the Doctor was eating at the beginning? And then he says, a blast of fresh air. So, it's a very complicated show this week. Shall I point out?
Demeter seeds. They were the crunchy seeds.
Anyway, thank you, Robert. Now, we haven't had Debbie Melrose on the show for so long. We've had a summer in between now and her previous appearance. She's now going to tell us what she thought of this story.
We've had a summer in between. Yeah, it does feel like that. I'm sorry I've been away for so long. I like this. As you said, I thought when you said it was a cuddly story, that kind of described it pretty well, actually. It was a nice change to have a companion. I liked the set established relationship they already had. It was very comfortable. I would like to see an intro. I think that's always fun for the Doctor to meet the new companion. And this was a great new way of introducing someone. Like when we met Susan the first time, she already knows how her relationship with the Doctor works because it's her granddad, you know. But it's I thought it was really good. But I did feel, you know, like Robert, that it is the screaming is too much. I know she's famous for it, but it just was out of character because she was so into everything. Unless she is just generally one of those women that does scream at everything, because I know a few people who do that. Even if you just walk into a room and they'll go, ah, oh god, it's you. You know,
it does that.
It's just so weird that you just think, okay, you screamed again, fine. But I liked the Vervoids. I thought so I've seen quite a few people cosplay as them, and I'm really tempted to do it myself because it's
incredible
just such
cosplay
a cool
as well.
Doctor Who character.
Yeah.
And Tom says he's about to open a drawer, so do beg your pardon. Okay.
Christian Basil says the Doctor did flirt with the stewardess.
Sorry?
Christian Basil says the Doctor did flirt with the stewardess.
Well, it was a good little story, and I watched it with and without the court appearance. Naturally, the story really did Scanwell without the court scenes, because obviously you keep the momentum going of the story. So it really did chase through, had a good pace. But I totally get that he's still on trial, but as a standalone without the trial bits, it was really good, a really good story. And yeah, as you said, cuddly. I like the use of the music, the sets, and you know, another base under siege. But and the whole moral of the Vertvoids, how they use the Vertvoids and what they're for and everything, and the Doctor just deciding we've got to get rid of them. And it's just another good classic base under siege Doctor Who, and I quite like Mel.
Splendid. Right then, everybody, be quiet, because Kirby wants to listen to his specially recorded and written jingle, what I did for him.
Kirby's trying his hardest to bore us, trying to make a cup of tea. You know he's going to ignore us, maybe you will go for a wee.
So what do you think of it then, Kirby?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go upstairs.
You're going upstairs? I wanted to hear what you think about the show. What's the matter with you?
Go for a wee.
Yeah, I gotta go for a wee.
I love that.
Okay. My opinion of Terror of the Vertvoids.
Darn him.
Today would be nice, Kirby.
I was waiting for people to stop laughing. It's okay.
Tell it.
Thanks, Kirby. Well, let's move on.
I liked it better this time than when we talked about just before we were in episode 62, ages and ages ago, which that was the first time I'd seen it. It's
wow.
My biggest problem with it, I don't have any problem with Mel at all. In fact, I don't mind her screaming. And ooh, as I said a minute ago,
Kirby.
I was thinking exactly the same thing, Robert.
As I said a minute ago, when I'm watching things down here with Fred, and an unknown monster or something will come on the screen, she screams just like Mel.
Oh God!
So I'm used to that sort of screaming happening. So I've seen this so many times now that the courtroom scenes, it's just the way this whole Trial of Time Lord is. It's got the courtroom scenes. You get used to it. It's there. So what? Now, as people were saying about the introduction of Mel,
yes,
that exists in a novel by Gary Russell called Business Unusual from 1997. And that has the Doctor going to Brighton in 1989.
Trying his hardest to bore us. Time to make a double speech. You know he's going to ignore us. Maybe you will go for a wee.
Well played.
Are we there yet? Robert Vance Jr. says, "Happy Sunday, everyone." And then Lauren says, "He likes the screamers." Yes, talking about Kirby. Are we there yet? Can we move on?
I shouldn't say anything.
Have you finished? Oh, God, that's an awful thing to say. Sorry.
I can't finish because you'll play the...
No, that's not how it works, Kirby. Are you still going yet?
I'm not saying anything.
You're not saying anything? Where do we get up to? I've got...
I'm done.
Hey! I forgot what I was going to say. No,
I probably wasn't done, but I'm afraid you might do the jingle again. So
No. If you've got more stuff to say, you can play.
No, I don't.
You sure? One and last opportunity.
I'm sure.
You're sure? Sure, yeah. You sure? Okay, right. Where do we get up to? Right, so we've had...
Rachel.
We've got something come through on the live feed. Robert Vance Jr. said, well, welcome to Doctor Who, Mel. And Christian Basil says, cannot unhear. I think we're about time we heard from Mr. Ian Bissett. the connoisseur of Sixth Doctor stories.
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, he is the Sixth Doctor, I thought.
Yes, I am.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I've got the coat, so yeah. But it's not one of my story-wise, and I find it's overly complicated. That's my main problem with it, is you could take out a couple of the elements. Like, you don't need the inspector guy, at least doing that whole bit where he knocks himself off and creates that mystery. And
that's Murder of the Orient Express type thing, though.
Yeah, but yeah. The thing is, the Vervoids themselves and that whole... we've created this thing and we say we're gonna do wonderful things with it and it gets out and it gets its own conscience and it's got a good point to it. It's talking about, like, you know, this is what you're gonna turn us into slaves. That right there is a perfect story. You don't need all this other thing and the old age pensioner.
The genre though.
I mean, the Vervoids could have tried to take over the ship and you know, they didn't need, you know, Rudge, basically.
They're not pilots, though. The Vervoids aren't pilots, though.
Robert.
Left a bit, right a bit. Straighter up, you know.
I think Robert's disagreeing with you, Ian, but carry on.
Mm.
Really? Really? I just find it a bit complicated. Like, I think you could have taken a couple of elements out of there and fleshed out the whole... fleshed out the whole Vervoid line more, and that would have been really kind of cool. But, you know, there's some great performances. Honor Blackman is not one of them.
You have to explain that.
I don't know if it's that I don't like her per se, or if it's just this.
She seems a bit fed up to be there, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, like, it's like, oh, really? It's you? But it sounds like she's absolutely lovely and everything, but all I got was this annoyed lady. And it's just like, she didn't appear to be sciencey. She was just a bit of a B-word.
Oh.
Can I say the B-word in here?
No.
No. Good. No. I said the B-word.
Boris.
Yeah.
Boris!
Boring?
Boring will do.
Resting witch face.
Witch face. Yeah.
She just never looks happy. She's got this amazing scientific discovery in the hold, and it's just like she's got a face like a wet weekend. So, I mean, but there's wonderful stuff in this too. The makeup in it, the costume and everything. Yes, it looks a little rude. That's because we're all a little rude.
Yes.
It's not them, it's us.
I didn't think at the time, I must admit, it was only when I watched the extras on the DVD that, oh yes, they do look a bit rude.
Yes.
They actually did research on plants and based it on a number of different plants. All right. So.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. Because it looks like, you know, bits of, you know, when you go in those, the close-up all the stuff that we looked in at school, you know, the stamen.
But there's a TV program in the 70s called That's Life, where they had a segment on the show in which they'd produce a rude-looking vegetable.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. No. So it's not unheard of.
Yes. Yes.
Debbie remembers it well.
But, yeah, I mean, I think the makeup in this is really awesome. It's like you can see where they put the money in the various episodes, and it's like, it's just people who just want to produce some good stuff if you give them enough money to do it well. I think the one thing that's improved, I think everybody's enjoyment of all of these, is the fact that I think we all seem to be just ignoring the trial scenes.
Yeah.
Because we're not even really talking about them at all. Yeah. And I just realized that today, that we're, you know, that we're kind of just ignoring them, and it's really helping enjoy the story.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing I didn't mention, was the fact that the trial scenes totally pointless. The stories would have stood up on their own. There was no need for it.
That's what I was saying, because obviously the ones that I watched, they had the cut ones, and they were really good without any trial in them. It was brilliant. Mm-hmm. It ran really well. The momentum was good.
Yeah.
Don't need it.
No.
Yeah.
But, of course, then, bearing in mind what I said about the last two episodes of the series,
the Valiard ones. The Blu-ray?
No, yeah, that's on the 24 motion.
No.
Oh, I think I've got it on the Blu-ray. Ah. I just like to say Blu-ray a couple of times in Blu-ray. The episode.
Is that just to wind up Kirby? Blu-ray. No,
I haven't done it in a while. Sorry.
I refuse to get wound up.
Blu-ray.
In fact, I probably need to refuse to say anything, or else I might be jingled.
Robert Vence Jr. says, "Welcome back, Debbie and Robert." And Laurie Nick says, "The whole exercise craze theme in this was beyond annoying. If they have to, I can't they just run for their lives and exercise like New Who?" I think there wasn't much space to run on that ship, to be fair. But, sorry, you done, Ian?
New Who, I like that.
Yeah, I think so. Other thing I wanted to bring up is that I've got the complete season 2 Colin Baker 6-disc Blu-ray set.
Yes.
I wasn't sure if I bought that up before or not. So
you might have mentioned it.
Now I'm done.
Will you stop that? I feel bad enough already.
It's to the point of annoying, yes.
All right, then. Everybody's been waiting for this moment. Mary, what did you think of it?
Oh, well, I thought I didn't like Mind Warp. I really don't like this one. I agree with Ian. It is way too complicated. And that was the big problem. It's like every time, okay, this is the bad guy. No, that's the bad guy. Oh, well, you know, now everybody's dead and that's the bad guy. And I didn't think there was any real logic to that, because it seemed like some of the people that became the bad guy were also the people that were, you know, okay in other scenes. And I didn't like that. It was way too complicated. And I lost track. And because I lost track, it got very boring for me. And I agree with him on Honor Blackman. Yeah, I mean, she just seemed like she was pissed off all the time. And it's like, what's her point?
I'm trying to use my exercises.
I mean, I never once saw her in any kind of a scientific outfit to verify the fact that she was a scientist of any kind. And speaking of...
She wore a cape, damn it.
I know. I mean, that was more like a leisure outfit, you know.
I know. It was like, what the...
But I was beginning to wonder if maybe the continuity lady from the wardrobe department went on vacation, because Mel's jacket kept appearing and disappearing. Sometimes it was on, sometimes it was off. There never seemed to be any logic to, you know, like when she was wearing it and when she wasn't, because from scene to scene it would change. And the same thing with Honor Blackman's outfits. One minute she's in her jogging suit, next thing she's in her leisure outfit. And sometimes, multiple times during what should have been, you know, more than about 15 or 20 minutes, you know, this constant shifting of clothes with no real, you know, flow. And I hated the incidental music. I mean, there were times...
That's Malcolm Clark.
When a line would be delivered, it would be followed by boop, 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 boop. You know, it's like, wait a minute, are we watching a comedy show or are we watching Doctor Who? It just wasn't any sense. And about the trial scenes, I'm also curious to know, why did we go from what started out as an inquiry into a trial for his life? And it's like, whoa, when did the worm turn suddenly into something so awful?
Yeah, but it's different in Gallifrey. It's not. Yeah.
And if I wasn't already smart enough to kind of figure this out, the writer or director or somebody was always reminding me what kind of story we're watching, because they kept injecting that book, The Murder on the Orient Express, under my nose, you know. So it's like, okay, you know, I get what
you're trying.
It was
very Douglas Adams to do that.
Well, the one thing I did like in all of this actually was Mel. I liked her character, and I thought that Bonnie Langford showed a lot of range.
She's brilliant.
Yes.
Irritating sometimes. She was soft and emotional other times. And I liked her peppiness. And I didn't mind her screaming. Maybe because...
I had the cuddle at the end as well. That was really nice. Yeah.
But because people have made such a big deal out of her screaming, you know, I was bracing for it. But, I mean, it never really bothered me. And like Debbie has said, you know, there are women who just do that. You know, you walk in the room and it's like, ah! You know, that kind of stuff. You know, they'll scream for anything. So
But the rest of her character.
No, I don't think so. She's a very high energy type. So it occurs to me, you know, that part of that energy releases itself, you know, whenever she's surprised or shocked or, you know, whatever. So I don't care.
Happy dog.
There may be stories yet in which the screaming becomes annoying, but I was not.
Oh dear, sounds like there is.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see.
But overall, it was way too complicated, and it got into too much. I mean, there were just, like Ian said, too many side stories, too many suspects, and I just lost track, and then therefore I lost interest. So this is definitely a low point for me.
Thank you, Mary.
Have you seen it before?
If I have, I'd forgotten about it, but that would.
Okay. Kerry Miles says, if you want to know how the Doctor met Mel, read the very good story in the Missing Adventures BBC books Business Unusual. Mm-hmm. And Lillian Robin says, it's Pip and Jane. What do you expect?
Yeah, there's that.
I think there's actually a Big Finish story.
Is it the two doctors?
Sit around.
Ian?
Yeah.
Was it two doctors?
I'm trying to
They had her meeting her, and then they had a second doctor coming along meeting her.
Yeah, and it was set in Peace Pottage and stuff like that, and there was stuff going on.
Because they mentioned that, don't they? Yeah.
Yeah. But Christian Basil.
Right, the Wrong Doctors. It was called The Wrong Doctors, sorry.
Well, we've got plenty of Big Finish to talk about one day. Christian Basil says, I think...
Terry Miles said that, I said that a few minutes ago.
Did you? Oh. Okay. Christian Basil says, I think Terror of the Vervoid should have been two parts. It was a really brilliant idea to have a murder mystery on a space vacation ship, but budget, continuity, and just the focus went out of whack. That it didn't know if this was another Doctor Who adventure or Trial of the Time Lord. It was almost we were going to find
your glasses.
I've got my glasses on. The murder eventually, as people were dying off left, right, in another 10 minutes would have been easy to find the murderer as the last man standing. Well, eventually everybody was going to get killed by the Vervoids, weren't they?
Yeah.
So,
Master.
Yes.
First of all, is Mary finished?
I don't know. Yeah. I think she had finished, then Robert asked her a question.
You distracted me at the point where I forgot that one of the things that bothers me, I think I referenced it earlier, you're going to play the jingle, aren't you?
No.
just do it, Kirby.
Get on with it!
That's why he plays the jingle.
The thing I don't like about it is the entire size of the interior of the spaceship. Because spaceships should have smaller spaces.
Why?
Should they?
You like the lounge area.
It's just filming science, sci-fi TV.
It's a science fiction fantasy television program.
I know, I understand.
Should be smaller, goddammit.
I read too many Heinlein novels set on interstellar spaceships that took months for a trip to happen. And they're just not that big.
Okay,
in my brain.
And I've seen numerous sci-fi shows in which the interiors of the ships are huge. Yes. So
Star Trek's pretty good for that.
Yes, and what about that lovely film Passengers, which I absolutely adore?
I haven't seen that.
I don't like that one because I don't like how he tricked her.
Yeah.
But we're talking about the size of the spaceship, not the crux of the plot.
That's what she said.
And speaking of Star Trek, yes. Master just brought it up.
I didn't mention Star Trek.
It's more my fault.
Anyway, I'm going through original series Star Trek with Fred. And just last night. Last night we watched Shore Leave, which she'd never seen before, and with the screaming, she screamed at the white rabbit.
Why?
Really?
Oh, my goodness.
It was a surprise. God. She didn't expect it.
Okay.
Right.
So she's one of these people that screams.
Okay, that's fine.
It wasn't a very scary rabbit, though.
No, it wasn't.
I'll be screaming in a minute if we can't get on with the show. Right, what's his name? Oh, Kirby, yeah. You put in a request for feedback, but at this point, I feel it's appropriate to do the official...
Kirby Mansion.
yes, that's the jingle for Tim Drury's mention. I know we've already done it before, but that's the point of the show where we have to mention Tim Drury. Right then, Kirby, feedback.
Jefferson Lee and... Oh, by the way, the feedback, the pictures I used this time were...
What's that? Oh,
God. What was that?
Does he do his own sound effects?
I missed what happened.
It was gross, whatever it was.
It was probably me leaning back in my chair.
Oh, that's what he says.
Hang on, I put my bolt in, otherwise it'll flip and flip backwards and flip me out of it. Go on, Kirby, get on with it.
I usually use still shots from the episodes when I ask for feedback. In this case, I used... Huh?
You used photos.
I used photos from a convention I attended a few years ago. Where someone had built a statue of a Vervoid. And so there's a picture of Colin standing next to it and also a picture of me with a weird face standing next to it.
Anyway, the feedback.
Anyway, Jefferson Lee Ng says Mel screams at the same note as the theme tune Sting.
Yes.
Robert Haynes says, unfortunately. Alan T. Butcher, the greatest scream ever in the show. Sorry, I mean the scream that grates most in the history of the show. One more reply. Someone named Ian Bissett. I think it's brilliant. Plus an amazing skill. Lillian Robin posts the clip from Bugsy Malone.
Yay.
What'd she say, though? What did she say?
Oh my God, the screeching. Okay, hit it, Joe. If you have not seen that, that is just you might even want to play that little segment. It's only about a minute long.
I love that. Oscar, I'm back.
Have I got to play what now?
Wait until I'm done with this, and I'll remind you.
We're going to be
says, "Terror of the Vervoids." I'm not really sure why, but I quite like Mel. Well, except for when she screams.
Yeah.
I think Bonnie Langford does a good job, and she's not around for too long anyway. Mm-hmm. As for the story, I find the direction slow, the dialogue horrendous, and the characters forgettable. What were we talking about? Otter Blackman is great, but most of the actors here are woefully miscast. Why is the head of security played by an old-age pensioner? Well, it was his... He had to be killed, of course, obviously. And as for the Vervoids themselves... I have no clue what the design team were thinking. I quite like the Agatha Christie-type premise, and the main set is attractive. But other than that, I'm struggling. This gets an extra star for having a genuine Bond girl legend as its main guest star, but honestly, it's pretty poor. 2 stars out of 5.
Okay.
Robert Wentz Jr. says, going to watch later, but it's going to be like fingernails on a chalkboard. This is an Ian Kirk thing, which isn't a script.
Oh, wow. Hang on, that deserves one of these as well on its own. Oh, we didn't play it properly. Just the tone of your voice meant that we had to play that.
The old guy on the spaceship was out for revenge because they were getting rid of him and he felt he deserved more. They liked that idea so much that they reused it for Voyage of the Damned with Kylie Minogue.
Yeah.
Robert Wentz Jr. says, I thought it was familiar. Thanks for reminding me of that. Neil James posts a still with a subtitle of the Vervoids saying, we are doing splendidly. And he says, no, guys, you really aren't. Robert Wentz Jr. says, you're doomed. You're doomed. You're doomed. And he also posts a picture of the doctor with his axe saying, well, time to axe this story.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. What was that?
I just sneeze.
Jeez.
And also a still of the doctor with Honor Blackman. He says, okay, let me get this straight. You were a Bond girl with Sean Connery, and you're in this story.
That's why she was so pissed off all the time.
And then I point out, for years I thought they were playing Galaga, or however you pronounce it. No, they're playing Phoenix. And I found that from the info text. Review of Robert Wentz Jr. Review of the Trial of Time. Oh, good grief! This goes on forever.
No, it doesn't.
Review of the Trial.
Don't take any notice of him, Robert. Keep it coming.
Part 3. Well, before I start, was wondering, can you add new charges while a trial is still going on? Well, it's
a Time Lord trial, yes.
Yes, a Time Lord trial. Mm. The Doctor, for his defense, is showing a future adventure, but wouldn't the Doctor need to be found not guilty to have a future?
Yeah. Good point. Exactly.
Big plot. Yep.
So the story becomes a what-if. Terror of the Vervoid seems to be a mix of past stories, Nightmare of Eden, and Seeds of Doom, with a feel of something Douglas Adams, I said that, might have done. A murder mystery whodunit, just missing the mark. The Doctor and the Captain seem to have met before and more messing about around with the Matrix, which we find out more information in the next episode. Story. Really, genocide, Valyard? Honor Blackman plays a scientist, added her acting chops to the story. Besides being in Goldfinger, but was also in the black and white Avengers series in the late 50s. No, it was 60s, sorry. Mm-hmm. Written by Pip and Jane Baker, not as good as Mark of the Rani. Music was kind of off. And how can Mel tell the Doctor what to eat and drink and Perry could not? Good point. Well, Hurricane Bonnie was only a category 1 or 2 in this one. She's a category 4 in Time and the Rani. Mm-hmm. Not exactly the love boat, but a lot of death in this one.
Yeah.
Finding a way to speed up the life cycle of the Vervoids was the only way not to bring them back again. Maybe it was a great idea on paper, but not on the screen. Wars of the Deep, anyone? My rating is 2 out of 5.
Well, judging by the amount of effort they put into those costumes, it's a shame they didn't get a chance to bring them back, to be fair.
Yeah.
Much better than Warriors of the Deep.
Mm-hmm. I will skip in Kirk's script.
Well done, Robert, Kirby.
Robert Wentz Jr. says, well, no bubble wrap in this one. Lori Nix, I always said this was the worst production of Cats I ever saw, but then they made that film recently. Oh, wait. Through episode 12? You mean it's not over yet? Be right back. She also says, I don't hate Mel. Really, I don't. She's just a little too annoyingly familiar with the Doctor. Mm. Not her character's fault. It's like when you go to a party in the early 80s, blackout, and come to in the mid 80s and find that your date is engaged to a jazzercise instructor. Now, well, you can play the clip.
I've got to play the clip of I. Hang on. There it is. I was waylaid. Here we go. Here's the clip.
Brace yourself.
It's quiet, isn't it?
I'll give you one more chance, you hear me?
Lena, honey, you come back to me.
I'll give you one more chance, you hear me, Oscar? Otherwise, I'm out for good. Out. I'm not being humiliated in this place. You know, I am the star, and I should be treated like it absolutely all the time. Okay, hit it, Joe.
Goodness.
I love the fact that the guy who goes, Lena, honey, you'll come back to me, was a Blue Peter presenter around the time of this documentary.
That's true, yes.
It's only a matter of time.
Anyway, that's enough of that. But yes, that's quite cute, really. She doesn't look much different, does she?
Business in my face.
It's very sort of theatery,
that
isn't it?
That was all of the feedback.
Because, of course, Bonnie Langford was in Peter Pan, playing Peter Pan at the time. She
was Peter Pan.
Was announced as the companion. That's the end of that bit of feedback, but I'm going to send some feedback out to the lady. Are you well enough, Debbie, to read some feedback?
I'll give it a go.
Well, you're not going to get this one. This one is Mary Blitzlang is going to read Terry and Linda Miles. You've got it, Mary.
Yes. Hold on. Do I have to do it like right now?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm sending Debbie a load of stuff, which unfortunately I've sent too much to her. I think it's copied too much, is it? I don't know. Yeah, it has. Sorry, Debbie, I've sent too much to you. I'll try and remend it. Yeah, Mary, if you wouldn't mind doing that bit while I correct the...
Okay. Thank you. It just took me a minute to...
Yeah, I haven't put anything yet.
Okay. No, it's because I'm amending it. Well, I've now ejected the DVD. Blast. It's all going wrong.
Well, we're not watching it anymore, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Oh, it's all got... Right, oh, so send it anyway.
I'm going to read from Terry and Linda Miles.
You are.
Yes, right now.
Yes.
Good evening, everybody. Trial of a Time Lord, parts 9 to 12, or Terror of the Verge Vervoids. Wow, pussy galore.
That's what she said.
Great to see Honor Blackman at 61, looking the same as she did in The Avengers and Goldfinger. Really? Okay, what's...
I don't think so.
I don't remember looking like that.
How dark are you?
Once again, Pip and Jane gave us a base under siege story or a Christmas carol. Think about it. At last, plants get revenge on vegans. Good to see the captain of the 80s TV show Triangle, set on a Felix Stowe North Sea ferry, has moved on to be Commodore Tonka Travers of a Starliner. He just can't get away from carrying passengers. I feel there is a missing story there when the doctor arrives on the Triangle ferry. Kate, the Ronnie, O'Mara, was also in Triangle. Just for Kirby, Sandra Dixon, Trillian, was also in Triangle.
Ah.
Back to the story in hand. What with the courtroom scenes interrupting the story and the slow movement of the storyline, I agreed with Linda that it was becoming boring. Myself, I found the extras better than the story, and they were quite bad. I had to turn the sound down as I knew that Screamer would get on my nerves and she'd disappoint. You could tell the purse strings had been tightened as the monsters were compost. Most of the money had been spent on the, well, let's say heads and not on the plant bodies. I couldn't understand a word one of them was saying as he mumbled his lines.
Yeah, that's what I found.
Yeah, I have checked in the garden and not one plant has two arms or two legs. Not one of them has tree leaves as they all have that's long leaves. All in all, meh. Linda is looking forward to part 13-14 next week, as she is very confused at the moment as to what is going on. And that's from Terry and Linda Miles.
Okay. I'm going to relieve Debbie because she needs some digestion.
Like I said earlier, Master.
Pardon?
Like I said earlier, they did spend a lot of money on the costume parts as well because they had three different leaf designs.
Okay. Thank you. Right, so Debbie can digest the next bit of blurb a bit more. We're going to do this.
Hello, 20 Megawatt Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
Hello, Ian. I'm Ian.
Terror of the Verboids by Pip and Jane Baker.
Yay.
The Vionysium Mel. This story was written in a hurry by Pip and Jane Baker. They were able to speed up the process by reusing the plot of The Ark in Space. That was a Tom Baker-era story, where a bunch of aliens in space attack humans one by one so they can eventually take over the Earth. The trial continues. I think the Time Lords who swivel back and forth, watching the story, represent us, the viewers. The Valiard is Michael Grade, who wants to take the Doctor's life and the lives of all his future incarnations. The Mogarians wear face masks, but do not do social distancing. This is the first story since Perry's departure, and ironically, they need a botanist.
Yes.
The two Doctors was meant to discourage meat-eaters. Now they're having a go at people who eat vegetables. How did the Verboid know to turn on the shower to fool the stewardess when it had killed the old man? The phaser seems to be labelling guns upside down, with a ballpoint pen jammed where the embossing disc should be. Ventilation ducts? I am not a fan. Melanie Bush is not a popular character. I can't tell that joke here. I definitely can't tell that one either. Well then, bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. I did think though, actually, when he's talking about some of the dialogue that Mel had, did sort of, I could see those words coming out of Perry's mouth. I just wondered if there might have been, you know, it might have originally been written for Perry.
Well, no, Master, he has included the jokes he couldn't tell in the transcript, which is posted on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group.
Are they tellable? Are they rude?
Yes, they're there.
They're there.
They're there.
They're not that rude.
Okay.
They're not that bad.
A little bit. You're arguing about it.
Come on, I'm prone to drop the F-bomb every now and then. I don't think it can be
Well, not on this show, Debbie. Thank you very much. I've never heard you drop the F-bomb. Or maybe once.
More than that.
When was that?
Oh, right, Debbie.
A long time ago when I had to learn how to curb my enthusiasm.
Okay, then. Go on, then, Debbie. You have some stuff.
Okay, I'll do my best. The monsters will see you next Tuesday, Doctor, or pussy galore on a spaceship. That's what James Bond said. Dear 20 Megabyters, Terror of the Vervoids is, of course, a closely studied moral tract about the abuse of other forms of life and shows the Doctor approving of the action and endorsing within the trial the idea that total annihilation of another life form is reasonable on the basis of its threat to you. Therefore, it is saying that not only is it moral to destroy the COVID-19 virus and deprive it of its hosts, but this carries over to other reproducing systems which we would normally call life. Hence, the Vervoids were not seen to be wrong to commit horrific mass murder of those that feed on plants, but neither are humans wrong to destroy a form of plant which will inevitably treat us and an enemy they must as an enemy they must destroy. This seems a bold, if morally concerning, departure from the show's usual celebration of life of all kinds. The trial arc becomes even more closely entwined here as the rather wildly fluctuating prosecution flips to genocide on the basis of the defence's evidence. Clearly, they allude to a corrupt regime's hubris in tackling those they feel oppose them. It should be noted that while some suggest Pip and Jane Baker are completely rubbish, they must be out of their minds, as the plot does manage to accomplish a sort of intricate Christie-type tale with various goings-on at one level of nefariousness, oh, I like that word, or another within which is set a murder mystery and with added world-threatening danger. So they did deliver on what they were asked for, even if many of the characters talk a bit artificially. We also learned that without this story where Chris Clough got a good lift in his directing career, it might not have led on to his being behind the making of Skins many years later. So it all seems worthwhile now. All in all, Terror of the Vervoids is all right. A sort of amateur agrarian robots of death with more people hanging around. The cast do a reasonable job with dialogue that is not very good, even if the vocabulary is. The rather parochial nature of the Doctor's prior acquaintances here are a slightly incongruous element. Having a companion appear without introduction is a bold move, which does not work out well, especially as the character of Mel seems like a pastiche of Bonnie Langford's youthful public image, rather than a realistic character which she would have been very capable of playing. Once again, Big Finish have not only fleshed out this character significantly, but even provided a comprehensive account of her and the Doctor's first meeting, which sorts out the complexity of the situation, relying heavily on acting tour de forces from both Langford and Baker. Honor Blackman gives a classy performance as you'd expect, but maybe would have shone more in a less prosaic story. The music deserves some mention, as it is quite remarkable how inappropriate quite a lot of it is in the context of death and threat.
Yes, yes.
This story is perhaps 4 episodes too short, as this season is nearly over already, which is madness. And anyhow, it may be useful to see what really happened, and many of the cutscenes would have been worthwhile keeping. Next up, Doctor Who and the 20 megabyte Doctor Who modem, or the 1.5 Doctors. Those are my thoughts.
Yes.
Butcher.
I'm so glad that yeah, the megabyte modem, yeah. I always meant to do a soundbite of the megabyte and find a 20 somewhere else in Doctor Who, but I never got around to doing it. But yeah, thanks for that. Alan?
If I can say, what I always hear about Bonnie Langford is how she was a child star and she had quite a career behind her before she even came into this. So when people in England saw her, they were bringing with them, you know, all that they knew about her.
Yeah.
But in America, she was brand new. She was a fresh face and she had no baggage, you know, no acting baggage. Mm. So, you know, I think she probably was pretty well received here as opposed to, you know, how she was received there.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. I'd be interested to know what other people from the US think, though.
Yeah. The jokes, by the way, were when he said Melanie Bush is not a popular character, she is less like than George W. Bush. And I can't tell that joke here. And then he said, nobody wants to bring back the Bush. He thinks he can't tell that yet. I'm quite keen on the Bush myself, not necessarily George W. Bush.
That's what I meant about a bit rude.
I do wish the next door would shave, trim their bush a little bit. It's overflowing into our garden somewhat.
Naturist.
Oh dear.
Right, where do we get up to?
At least you don't say the F-bomb, though, right?
No, we do not.
Yeah, that's me.
No, we do, blimmin' well not. A heavy fine for that particular word. It's at Facebook, isn't it?
Fire track.
Right, I was trying to find my next article. Oh, here it is. No, it's not. It's the wrong page.
Feather duster.
Oh, here it is. Right then. Yeah, so Lillian Robbins says, someone has said this before, but I'm looking forward to Alan publishing these in a book.
Yeah, I'd love that.
And
I would quite happily sit there and read them all for him again.
Out loud.
Through the audiobook.
Through the audiobook.
Yes.
Oh, occasional swearing.
Essentially, we could do that, you know. But I think people generally like to listen to audiobooks without the sort of stumbling over the words bits, you know, which are obviously put in there for...
That's part of the charm.
Okay, right. Yeah. I suppose we better move on to Doctor Who news. But before we move on to Doctor Who news, we have to mention the passing of Chadwick Boseman, because it was such a shock indeed that my wife came into the bedroom to wake me up to give me the news. The last time she did that was when Princess Diana died. So it's had quite a big impact on this household, mainly because he was an amazing actor, very, very young, and it's such a tragic story. And when since this news has come out, and I've since found out about the trolling that he's had to put up with while being very, very ill, it makes it all the more heartbreaking. But yeah, it's very, very sad news. So I thought it's obviously I had to mention that, I'm afraid. And by way of tribute, I bought, which has now become very rare, a Black Panther Funko Pop for my shelf. So there you go. Doctor Who news. Let's see if we can find some. Anybody heard of any Doctor Who news before I actually load up the page?
I did. Esther, about the...
Esther, I've got to step away for a minute.
Oh, that's good news.
Good for a week.
No, I did about the animation for next year, the two stories, Evil of the Daleks and...
Yes, that's right. I heard about that. That's good news. Yes, although I'm a bit behind on the animated stories.
You haven't watched any, have you?
I haven't watched all of the reconstructions since we did the journey, and we were going through the 1960s story. They had done a few, but they hadn't done some of them. So, you know, we're a little bit behind on that.
You did do Faceless One.
Yeah.
Macroterra.
No, I haven't even got that one yet, but it is on BritBox, I think, so I should at some point get around to watching it. DoctorWhoNews.net isn't loading for some reason. Have they not been paying their bill?
I wonder.
No, every time I type it in, it switches over to DoctorWho.tv. I suppose I'll see if they got any news. That's a BBC thing, isn't it? Oh, no, it's not. No, there's no news. It just says top Zygon moments. This is a rubbish page, so really. I have to thank Robert for bringing out the most interesting official piece of Doctor Who news for the week. That they're planning to... I think that's not just the one you were talking about, Robert. They're actually planning to do a few more. I'm looking forward to when they do Marco Polo. I'd love to
Can I just say, Lillian has just put onto the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast page, Mel screams. Every single time Mel, Bonnie Langford, screams is on the YouTube link.
Oh, no. That
you
must be...
My new ringtone.
And all the, if they play that one, all the dogs in the neighbourhood start running around manically.
Adam.
Hey?
Adam.
Yes?
I've got DoctorWhoNews.net here.
Well, how come you've got it and I haven't?
And I've got Doctor Who News also.
But when I type it in, it changes to DoctorWho.tv/news. How bizarre. Maybe I'll try it on on Safari.
If you search it, then you go to the link underneath it. Because
you mean Google? Do you mean Google it? I'll try that.
No, there isn't much there.
Because you may not have Google.
I'll Google it. Doctor Who News.
Yeah, there's not really much.
No,
I spent that time on Victoria.
Oh yeah, there it is.
Stuff.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it?
Trailer.
Okay, this is what we got then. This Time Lord Victorious thing has been shouted about again. There's a little
cartoony
thing.
It's very convoluted as well. Yeah. It's over so many platforms.
I can't engage with it, I'm afraid.
I'm not even bothering.
Nor me.
Getting into it at all.
What I would like them to do is to bring out a decent adventure game like the one they bought out on the Nintendo Wii a few years ago.
Or a decent series.
Yeah, we can't have everything, can we?
That'd be nice.
Yeah, that would be nice, yes.
But yeah, Right, sponsorship news. Now, of course, as I've been saying over the last few weeks, Heroes are have been added to our list of illustrious sponsors.
Oh. Yay!
Is that whowon.co.uk?
What, Heroes? That's iwheroes.co.uk, Kirby. Yes, yeah, they're officially on board now, but of course you can only actually order from their website if you're living in the United Kingdom at the moment. They are planning to add international shipping, and I in fact ordered my Black Panther from their website. It was very easy, and if you're able to come over and collect it, you save a bit of shipping. Of course, if you come it over from America, then it's probably going to cost you a bit more money. But yeah, isleofwightheroes.co.uk for some fab stuff and fab people as well, actually, running that place. We also have whowon.co.uk, who have, like I say, they're the book and audio specialists. If you want to actually, because did you realize in the old days, Debbie, you could actually buy a book made of paper?
I love books made of paper.
Yeah. I do too.
And they sell these book, these novel things. Novel things! books made out of paper. Yeah, so if you go there,
there's also things like novel viruses.
Pardon?
He's being clever.
Is he?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's a novel virus.
Play the jingle. Play his jingle.
No, it wasn't long enough. Yeah, so the 2021 annual is coming out. We've got a dinner and a show, which is a Torchwood story, which is ironic at the moment because we're currently watching Series 6 of Desperate Housewives. Of course, we've been looking forward all this time for John Barrowman's appearances in Desperate Housewives, and it's an absolute thrill to see him playing a very, very nasty man in Desperate Housewives. Fury from the Deep DVD, which I still haven't watched yet.
When's that out?
Pardon?
When's that out?
It just says 2020, so probably over the next 3 months, I would guess. The Graham O'Brien figure. Of course, B&M have lots of fantastic Doctor Who figurines and figures. And
what about
sets.
S&M?
No, Robert. B&M. So yeah, there's lots and lots of really fine products available on Who Won.
September 14th.
Boys.
The Fury from the Deep DVD.
When?
September 14th.
Oh, because it's not listed over here, so I don't know when it's coming out in Australia.
I don't know. I don't know when it's coming out here either. That's the Amazon.co.uk.
Right.
Because they're very slack.
Well, in 2 days' time, we can actually start thinking about Christmas because we're entering into the autumn period. And if you want to buy your loved one who happens to be a Doctor Who fan a Doctor Who scarf, because the autumn's coming, need a scarf, then go to lavazzi.co.uk, where you can find not just the Fourth Doctor's replica scarves, but lots and lots of fantastic Doctor Who, Star Trek, and non-franchise-related products.
I was going to say, it's spring where you are, yeah.
Well, you might need the scarf to sort of hit against the fires to put them out. Oh, no, that'll make them worse, wouldn't it? Don't worry about that. That's a stupid plan. But, yeah, so that's the stuff we got from our lovely sponsors. Yes?
I have a question. While I was out in the next room, I thought I heard Mel screaming. Did you play the thing that Lillian posted?
No.
She posted a YouTube video of every Mel scream.
Yeah, I don't really want to listen to all of Mel's screams, if you don't mind.
Why did we play that?
I wasn't in the room.
Yeah.
He's having a wee-wee.
You'd have to be a sadist to play that.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you wash your hands?
I appreciate the post. Not going to play it. Lord. Right then. So next time.
It's too short.
Next time, we're going to be discussing the ultimate foe. And the exciting thing about the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
It's less than 2 minutes of screens.
Shut up. The exciting thing about the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast is you never really know who's going to be on the show apart from me next week. So. Ultimate foe. It's only two-parter. It's certainly doable for everybody. Certainly myself, because I can watch it on the day that I actually record the show, if needs be. So, and I must admit, I have already alluded to the fact that I really do like Ultimate Foe, even though it's a bit sort of bitty, isn't it? Because half is written by Robert Holmes and the other half is written by Pip and Jane Baker. In some ways, I wish it was the other way around. What?
Eric Sabert's got a credit as well.
Has he? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's what we're doing next week.
Well, uncredited, I should say.
What? Pardon?
Uncredited, I should say.
Uncredited, yes.
He did work on it, but he's uncredited.
Yes.
Like, well, you said Douglas he was Adams. Credited. Why are you changing your mind?
No, I know.
Boring. No, you're boring my listeners and viewers on my own timeline accidentally this today. So be quiet. So yeah, that's it. I've just spotted the Every Mel Scream clip. Oh God, somebody must have really loved putting that together. I'm not going to play it, but too much time on your hands. Oh, by the way, Debbie. I'd have to say, I've got to play a piece of music for you. The fact that you've managed to survive so far, the whole show. So please listen to this piece of music dedicated to yourself.
Now, I have been lying in bed the whole of this episode.
I have to say that piece of music is actually quite topical at the moment because some people have been trying to remove Land of Hope and Glory from the proms because of
ridiculous.
Colonial content.
If you're going to remove it and you're going to remove it by singing crazy. The lyrics, learn the lyrics.
Yeah. But we had an African-British person on a talk show complaining about the people who wanted to remove these lyrics because it's all part of history and stuff. So, yes, everybody has their own angle of discussion, but I think they're keeping it in. But it's only the second... That last piece, that... There's no mention of Land of Hope and Glory or whatever. That is just a fantastic piece of music, and that's why it's on that clip. Just wanted to say that. I put that particular music together... mixed it together on the 8th of April 2013. That's interesting, isn't it, everybody? This is what people tune into this show for. Stupid facts like that.
We should play...
I thought it was for Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
I'd be very surprised if anybody listens to this show for any Doctor Who content. It hardly ever happens.
Master?
Yes?
According to my database,
we've
never discussed The Ultimate Foe.
Well, there you go. We're going to be discussing it next week.
Yeah, in fact, we've got... We also have not done Time in the Ronnie.
Oh, joy.
Oh, my goodness.
And now, I did do Time in the Ronnie with the Earth Station Who a long time ago.
Yeah, but that doesn't count on this
What
podcast,
has that got to do with anything? Oh, God.
That means I've done a podcast on it before.
Yet.
Kirby's trying his hardest to bore us. Time to make a cup of tea. You know he's
Don't
going
you
to ignore us. Maybe you will go for a wee.
I'll have to add on the flushing sound effect to the end of that clip.
You deserve that one, Kirby. Yeah. You deserve that.
Right then. So next week then. Hopefully I'll see you all, and of course the listeners and viewers and people providing feedback, because that seems to happen nowadays, which is great. So until then, I'll be back at work this week. But until then, goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Bye.
Scarecrow.
Bye.
20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.